Welcome to Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 8, titled Evolution. Fitting title. This is the mid-season finale for people who are kind of following along at home in real time with us. This, you know, it was aired in November of whatever year, 1867, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
They took, you know, their traditional break to February for the next episode. Aaron, what'd you think of this one?
I really like this episode. I think that there is something The Walking Dead did really well in the first season or two that they haven't quite done as well is atmospherics. Because, like, I think they take the cheap route of like, well, we're sweaty running through a hot Georgia forest, so let's just lean into that. We're sweaty and we're running through a hot Georgia forest. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of the shots that I thought did a really good job of establishing like the mystery and kind of the dread, particularly when like Jesus, Aaron, and Daryl are hot on the trail of Eugene and they're like walking across this field that's like shrouded in fog and you can see a barn sticking out of it. And then like, you know, the graveyard shot is like something straight out of an old Hammer horror film.
Yes.
And probably intentionally that way. Uh-huh. And I just fucking loved it. And, you know, the establishing of like, you know, what's going on with these walkers, hearing them kind of whisper, the one that like, you know, dodged Jesus kill stroke and like the discovery of the true nature of them. I thought all that stuff was really, really well done. Mm-hmm. They're doing some really interesting stuff with Negan. It is still starting to try my patience, this keeping mystery, whatever fucking massive rift. Like every single episode, yeah, we find out that this rift between the especially Hilltop and Alexandria is just bigger and bigger between Alexandria and all the different things. Like some shit went down in the no man's land between these things. And, you know, I definitely invested in it, but like I don't understand the narrative value of keeping it a mystery. So that's the one. That's the one huge structural flaw I see in this episode or in this half of the season so far. What do you think?
I largely agree. My first viewing of this, I had my mind was reeling at the idea that somehow in this dense fog covered landscape that you're talking about in a cemetery that I'm not even sure is on the route that they were supposed to be on. That Michonne could somehow meet up with Aaron and Daryl and all. And I went back the second time and I realized they did just the barest amount, just enough to make me think, okay, maybe this is possible. And so I that kind of turned me from hating that last scene to being like, okay, well, let me sit back and look at it from a wider perspective. Because like some of the best stuff The Walking Dead's done, in my opinion, as a classic horror fan, is when they do these homages to things. Like, you know, you're talking about the Hammer horror stuff, the Draculas and the mummies and the Wolfmans, things like that.
Sure.
Very much, you know, that graveyard feels like that, or it feels like some of this old classic zombie stuff where, like, the fog rolls in and that's, you know, when the dead come out. Things
the
like
thunder
that.
And the lightning and the whistling through the wind,
through
the trees,
that's real good. And then, you know, one of my favorite episodes from an homage perspective is the one where the governor is chasing Andrea, I think, through that building, and it's very much a slasher, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of thing. They really nail that when they go for it, and I was on second watch able to kind of sit back and go, okay, I see what they're going for here, and it's really working for me.
Yeah. And I like I didn't ever see the problems with the plot. Like I remember thinking like, how the fuck did they find Eugene? And then I'm like, oh, well, Daryl had a dog. And then from that point on, like I got really invested. Like, you know, I was genuinely worried for some of the characters. I was kind of shocked that they killed Jesus. And I guess that's something I want to discuss at the end of the episode, whether we think Jesus is actually dead. But like I was like just really caught up in like, gee, are they going to be able to get out of here? Because at this point, I'm assuming from episode, you know, season 9 on, like any of the main cast could die at any time. Yeah. Like, people are looking, like, if there's not enough zeros at the end of your renewal contract, and, you know, and if any of the major characters, like, even Rosita, something like Rosita dying would be a fairly noteworthy event, let alone something like Daryl or Carol or Ezekiel, or Michonne, God forbid. I think that that's adding a lot of charge. The fact that this show is long in the tooth and gray in the hair is adding a lot more emotional charge, because I feel, and I haven't kept up with any of the shit. Like, I was shocked that Jesus got stabbed. So it's like, at any time, I think any of these people can go. On the other hand, there's always a chance that they're going to dumpster him. So, it's, you know, because it is The Walking Dead. But I think that that serves it well. The fact that, like, at this point, you know, Andrew Lincoln's gone. So many people are gone that, like, at any point, anyone could die. And that's exactly the way The Walking Dead should have always felt. Mm-hmm. And against all odds, I continue to be super invested into this fucking season of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, they gotta be careful with that, though. Like, you can kill too many of the wrong characters, like too many characters that people like, and leave yourself with only characters that people don't like or don't have, like, strong attachments to. And I think this show does not do great with its ensemble cast. You know, it's
right.
Granted, it's a big cast. There are a lot of people that they have to service in the story. And that leads to things like, oh, well, your character is going to die this episode, so I guess you get an extra 8 minutes of screen time. Like,
right.
That kind of shit where we look at it and go, this is so artificial. This is ridiculous. And you know, this is all like a symptom of how big the cast is.
And then when I think about the FNGs, the fucking new guys, like, I think this is a symptom of that, because why do you bring in five or six new colorful characters if not to replace, because you know you're going to have to replace some? Or, I mean, I guess you could also look at it another way and say, like, they've lost Carl, you know, in just the last season, and like the last season of episodes, they've lost what, Carl, they've lost Rick, more people than that died in the war. Jadis, we really have fond memories of Jadis, and you know, there's five or six of those new people, and they're probably, you know, another two or three main cast characters could die.
I don't know, there's just so many people. Like, they introduced not only the newcomers to the group, they also introduced some new teens. They've kind of, you know, put Henry into a place where a couple of those characters are going to become more prominent, it seems, like the blacksmith.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a hard thing to do, ensemble cast.
But you're right. Like, they do have to be careful who they kill and who they, because, like, you're right. Like, if you just kill, like, Michonne and Daryl and what, Ass Kicker and Eugene.
I guess there are a few of them. Yeah, Aaron.
And what? Aaron and Daryl. Like, if you kill those five off, then who the fuck stays around to watch the show?
Yeah.
But, you know, you can mix and match a few. Like, a, you know, big splashy death. You still got Maggie, who's off, and she's going to be coming back. So it is something they have to be careful. And I think it's not, at this point, some of these characters have been doing this for so long that they just want this. They're wanting out, you know, because
especially
they got
somebody like Danai. Like,
yeah,
she's a big movie star now, right?
Yeah,
like, she's bigger than Andrew Lincoln was when he started this.
She's made $2 billion from The Mouse since The Walking Dead blew up, and you know, there's going to be more of that in the offing for her. So,
and they're putting her in probably these awful wigs.
There's a lot of people probably looking for, you know, an easy exit, because they all got, like, they're gonna make so much fucking money. The residuals on this thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
The Netflix syndication, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure they're already, like, making that money.
Every time someone says, fuck it, and spends $20 on a season on Amazon, ting, ting, you know, it's like, it's just going to keep rolling in. So it'll be interesting to see them turn the curve on this, the corner.
And it's already starting to happen.
Yeah.
Like, you see, you know, Lauren Cohen left at some point to try and go
soft exit,
lead another show. I don't know that show did particularly well, but
right.
But
she's doing it. Yeah. Norman Reedus is riding, as we found out with Alan Joe.
I feel like that's a package deal, though. Like, he doesn't get to do Ride without Walking Dead and vice versa.
Hey, you want me to show up this fucking Georgia bullshit? You better finance my motorcycle trip around the world.
Uh-huh. and all my buddies.
And all my buddies, yeah. Need Michael Rooker, get his beak wet.
Yep.
Don't forget about Morgan. Don't forget about Steven Yeun. Mm-hmm. Is that how you pronounce it? Don't forget, like everyone's got to get taken care of, sure.
Yep.
Before we get to the episode, there's been some breaking news. Jim mentioned as we were starting to record the podcast, there's some stuff that's came out of Comic-Con. They have a stay-at-home staycation Comic-Con that went on last weekend. A bunch of information about various movies and video game projects and TV shows came out. The Walking Dead was no stranger to this treatment. Jim, what have you found out? What's our intelligence saying?
So as everybody knows, you might not know this if you're listening to this in the future, because this is season 9 that we're covering, and this news concerns the end of season 10 and a little bit extra. I don't know what to even call these, but the coronavirus essentially delayed the airing of season 10's finale for months. And this week on Twitter, the Walking Dead official account just came out and said, breaking news, Walking Dead season 10 will include 6 extra episodes that will air early 2021. And then in parentheses, October's finale will still be the finale. The additional episodes will just be extra, quote unquote. I actually have no idea what this means. I don't know how you can have 6 more episodes in a season that are not part of the season, but they're just extra.
It's hard to speculate too, because we haven't seen all of season 10. So I have no idea like what the state of the game board is at the end. So it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that season 10's finale was delayed because it was shot, but they didn't have any of the post-production done on it.
That's what I understand. Right? Yeah.
So they needed like music, they needed special effects, they needed localization stuff, all that stuff that kind of gets the icing on the cake before it's released. So Gimple mentioned at San Diego Comic-Con this last weekend that they're also are conceiving or planning or maybe even shot a limited season mini series that's based on a singular survivor character that we already know.
Is it Morgan? Please tell me it's not Morgan. He's got 4 shows already. Back.
Is there any reason to think that maybe these two things are connected? Because like I know the tweet's not connecting them, but like you've got Scott Gimple, who what the fuck is he even doing to Walking Dead? I thought they barred him from the set, exiled him to the shittier Walking Dead that nobody was watching anyway. Why is he still running his mouth about this? I don't. That's concerning.
I mean, it could be connected. It could also. I worry because AMC is notoriously cheap. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone.
Sure.
Especially when it comes to this show.
Better. Obviously better this season, but the budget still, we saw their water special effects, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it makes me wonder, like, are these leftover scraps that they had? Is this cutting room floor shit that they're just whittling together to make something out of it to cover a gap where they can't produce new content for the show?
I can't imagine. Like, if there was a 2 episode, maybe there's enough on the cutting room floor to justify that, but 6 full episodes?
Are these like, it could be a series of apocalyptic Zoom calls, just like, they all get stuck in different locations. It's maybe just over walkies.
Yeah. I just like imagine the post-apocalyptic Zoom. It's all over walkies. It's relying on teenagers to relay, the crosstalk, the paraphrasing, the telephone gaming going on. That could be pretty funny.
And half of the messages are just like, nah, I'm not going to send that.
So one thing I saw people speculating on, and this I don't know because again I haven't seen all of season 9, let alone season 10. But Lauren Cohen took another job that precluded her from having much of a impact on the series, and I'm assuming this the way people are talking happens in season 10 too. And I think that show is done now, so she could come back. And there's thoughts that the singular character series could revolve around Maggie and her getting back to the group. so that she can be reintegrated in a nice cinematic way, which I actually, that kind of sounds good. Like, Maggie is a character long standing in The Walking Dead, high interest level. Her like reconnecting with the main group over a 6-episode arc seems a little excessive, but not on the order of like a 3-episode governor arc or like a 6-episode Morgulizing arc or, you know, Morgan taking over Fear the Walking Dead for an entire season.
Yeah.
So I, that would be interesting, but like, they haven't shot that. And part of me is like, is this a little bit whistling past the Hammer Horror graveyard? Because if they haven't shot this, if this isn't cutting room floor, or if this isn't something they already have in the can ready to be kind of remotely assembled by technicians, they are counting on this COVID thing to blow over in time, like for early 2021. And that just, you know,
Now this has got to be something they've already got in the can, just sitting there going, oh fuck, we're going to miss our release window. So I guess just put it out there and that'll be like a stopgap between season 10 and season 11, which I'm sure 11 is going to be very much delayed because of the virus. So
now I could see that, like, you could actually shoot something like this Maggie miniseries probably in a cheap, socially distant way, because like, if she's going to be like, you know, she's going to be walking through a woods, you don't need sets. She's going to be having adventures with people we have no idea who they are, so that you can have no name actors and a minimal set, minimal cast, minimal crew. Maybe they could film this in the time of COVID and then, you know, put some special effects on it. Like, I could see this being like a low budget Skunk Works thing built up around Maggie and Lauren Cohen. Maybe it would work. I don't know. But the thing that's confusing me is they insist that this is part of season 10, right?
But it's not. So,
well, what the fuck does that even mean?
Right. There's a huge mixed message. Like, the literal text of what they wrote: season 10 will include 6 extra episodes that will air in early 2021. October's finale will still be the finale. These episodes will just be extra. So I don't even know. Like, I would understand that on like a DVD context. Oh, we're just throwing these scraps that we have or these other things that we did for fun or whatever onto the DVD. But this seems like it's just part of season 10, but they're going to have like 2 finales in season 10. And then the end of season 10 is going to be the end of those 6 episodes and no finale, really. It's just going to kind of wet fart into the sunset. I don't know.
I mean, here's the thing. If it's cutting room floor, I think the thing to do would be create a special edition of season 10 where you actually have longer episodes that you release as special events that have deleted scenes and cut scenes added back to them with all the effects work and music and all that kind of stuff. Kind of like what they did to Lord of the Rings, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the theatrical edition, which is, you know, Peter Jackson took all the footage, cut down to what he thought is the best tale to tell in a movie theater. And they had the special editions for fans that like, hey, I'll sit down here for 4 hours to watch The Fellowship of the Ring. I don't give a fuck. Give me more. But imagine if you just released a whole other movie that's just the special edition footage.
Yeah,
it would be out of context. It wouldn't have any connective tissue. It wouldn't make any sense for someone that hasn't seen it. It wouldn't be very entertaining. It'd be essentially watching the blooper reel on a DVD. So, like, I don't know. I'm interested to see what this is, because the other thing is, like, with AMC's publicity, whatever we think it is, the chance of it being lamer and dumber is always there on the table.
Oh, yeah.
The chance
of
us being delighted, I don't know.
I actually have a prediction that I think it will be these 6 extra episodes. If you recall, over the last few years, AMC has been doing this really shitty thing where they just sort of throw 2-minute episodes out there and call these things about, like, oh, Red Machete or some airplane thing or whatever. Absolutely guaranteed that's what this is.
Huh. So not even so that, like, okay, Red Machete with Lauren Cohen, though. Like,
no, but they've been doing this for the last 4 years or whatever, right? They've literally been releasing, here's season 8 with all of its 10 or 16 episodes. Here's a finale. Here's these 6 extra bullshit things that nobody cares about. So they're part of that season, but not really. So
Yeah, and we're going to air them into the first commercial break of Into the Wilds or Into the Badlands or whatever.
This is AMC hyping up something that is going to be just a nothing of 6 episodes, in my opinion. but we'll see.
It is weird to build up like this hype in October for a single episode. I think it's warranted because I think a lot of people are desperate for fresh television, especially returning television to care about, you know, like I would be beyond excited if we got one episode of The Expanse in December, you know, like, hey, we got this shot before it shut down. We're going to fully like I would be like on pins and needles. So I understand the appeal, but the six episodes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. The only way it seems like it's going to be super interesting if it is that Maggie story, and they've either got that in the can or they find a way to film it cheaply and safely.
It seems like they're trying to release all the stuff at once. Like October is going to be, you know, a big month, whatever that means for The Walking Dead, because you've got the finale airing, I think, on the 4th. On the 11th, you've got Fear the Walking Dead coming back, and you've got The World Beyond, which is premiering all in October.
Right.
So, they're wow, really they're like reloading
all the Walking Dead in October. Yeah. I mean, that's the way to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. We'll see how it all pans out in here in a couple of months.
We'll see.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, let's talk about the episode. Proper.
Let's do it.
We start off with Daryl, Aaron, and Jesus spying a small herd of walkers in their path to finding Eugene. The walkers are just milling around, which is strange to them, and they decide to go around them.
Yeah, it was eerie seeing these guys doing like these like interlocked counterclockwise spiraling, just milling around.
Yeah.
And knowing what I know at the end of the episode, the fact that like, you know, the true nature of these whispers, I'm wondering, why will some of this odd walker behavior ever
like be explainable. Like, why would you put how do you keep a group of walkers on this kind of holding pattern? And what purpose does it serve? Or is it going to be kind of like the spiral shit we saw in the walk on Game of Thrones, where it's like some kind of cool looking mystery, but you know, it's more aesthetic than actually satisfying.
Right.
But it's effective because, like, you know, that like when the shot lingers and you see that lone walker kind of turn its head to regard the group that just left, it's spooky. It fucking works.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not sure, you know, if this walker is a walker or if this walker is more evolved and it's maybe leading the pack here. You don't know what it is. And it worked. Aside from not being able to understand Daryl, even with subtitles on, it worked.
Yeah, that's going to be their anti-whisper technology. He speaks in, like, you know, the Navajo code talkers. They got a Daryl code talker. He can just kind of...
The walker, you know, talker.
Yeah, he can kind of boomhauer from King of the Hill into the... But who can... Yeah, you need... Boy, if they had Merle, they'd have something. Mm-hmm. They could just talk end-to-end on radios and be fully encrypted.
I feel like Carol. Carol can do it. Carol can understand.
Oh, yes, Daryl right. Speak. Carol and Daryl protocol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just comes in there. Man, I tell you, the walkers run around in circles and just from milling the ground, man. So just, I tell you what. And she's like, I think he's saying, yeah, unbeatable. How do you break that encryption?
I don't know. The walkers obviously still look great. The show does a good job with its prosthetics, better than its CG, certainly.
Yep.
That stuff looked good.
Just lean on the latex, boys.
Oh, yeah. Then Gabriel does some kind of Reiki-based bell religious ceremony with Negan. I think this is meditation.
Yeah, guided meditation. Yeah.
Apparently he tried to help, or he did help Negan through his rough patch with all of his visits. And Negan has kind of given up on ever getting out, and he's just living this life. But he's still trying to get into everyone's heads, saying stuff about what he overheard Rosita saying about some other guy. Gabriel leaves and he's told that Rosita was hurt as a messenger, that he spots the messengers from the hilltop.
Yeah. He's such a shitster, man. You can see his eyes light up when he kind of gets to Gabriel just a little bit under his skin. Mm-hmm. Of course, I think he's referring to the conversation that he like Rosita was having about the antenna repeater, right? Because didn't we get to see like that from a remove two episodes ago?
Maybe. I can't remember.
I don't think Rosita is stepping out on Gabriel. Yeah. But he is. He's a fucking shitster.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as it crests over, he breaks it open. And we also have a satisfying answer of why the governor went from broken man to kind of like
the governor?
You know, God damn it, the Negan. How he went from broken man to what he is now, and that's Gabriel, is essentially you know, talked him the not to death, the life.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. You know, religious people in general have this sort of savior complex.
Sure.
Where, you know, they're taught to see their life's calling as saving other people. And so it makes a lot of sense that Gabriel would see this sort of his Mount Everest, right? If I can save this awful, awful person, perhaps I can find some kind of redemption, because he's got his own shit in his past that he's still dealing with, I think. Like, I mean, he's trying to, you know, coach Trash Girl through this. He's trying to coach Negan through this. It seems to me like he's trying to help, but also sort of prove to himself or redeem himself somehow.
You might be in this because even Rosita, last I knew her arc, was she was kind of like on a pretty broken trajectory because, you know, she got her man, broadly speaking, stolen from her by Sasha. And then he got killed, and like she was kind of nihilistic for a while. So he does seem to like trying to fix things and, you know, restore the missing pieces of people.
I hate it because it actually makes a certain amount of sense.
Uh huh.
And that's not what I want from Walking Dead.
Yeah. Is this show going to be conventional, boring? Come on.
Yeah.
Got to have some insanity.
Yeah, I guess we'll get to the insanity here in a bit. So we go back to Hilltop, and everyone hurriedly hides behind the gates when Michonne's group shows up. Michonne tells probably very competent Bow Girl why they're here, and they're let inside the gates, where Tara fills her in on the situation with her missing party members. And she lets the group stay overnight until Jesus gets back to decide what to do with the new members.
What the hell is going on at Hilltop's reaction? Like, these riders are coming, the riders, and everyone, like, it's like a routine. They all retreat back to the walls. And then it's like, when Michonne shows up, I thought they were going to relax a little bit. But if anything, the tension increased. Like, yeah. I really hope they come up with something that lives up to this buildup and this hype, because I just can't understand it. It's very bizarre to me that they'd be having this reaction.
Yeah, I mean, they hint at it later. I guess it's in like the next scene or something when she's talking with Carol.
Yeah.
You know, they sort of hint around the edges of what might be the real core of the issue here, which, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this is all due to Rick and his disappearance, right? Like, she's still dealing with the residual effects of that.
I think it's that, but there's also this X-shaped scar and something about these, like, you know, maybe being menaced by some kind of roving band of whatever. But that doesn't make sense, because there's certainly can't be a threat on the scale of the Saviors.
Yeah.
So,
or even the herds.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, what, it's got to be something that's like on that scale, but different, and they're harvesting kidneys. I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but like, the fact that they would take away from that we need to isolate rather than get together and be stronger. I don't understand, because it's almost at this point, you know, if Hilltop's having, or if Kingdom's having trouble, like, achieving stability, shut it down. Shut it down. Build a village outside of the Hilltop. Like, go back to like the feudal days, you know, where you had a strong keep and the peasants and the community kind of like gathered around that. And when, like, you know, the tough times, everyone would retreat to that for safety. But like, I don't understand why they keep trying to make it at places that are falling apart, literally falling apart. There's places like Hilltop and Alexander, they're thriving, and they should just continue to expand their walls, continue to expand lodging and stuff for people, and you know, stop trying to make these loser communities work. You know, if the shelter's no good, go to where it's working. You know, expand your. So I don't know, but that stuff is all interesting, and it's like, that's, I guess it's frustrating, is that stuff got yada-yada'd over.
Right.
You know, the nation building that they were trying to do, and why it got fragmented. So I'm really looking forward to getting the complete answer to that and getting more of that.
I'm with Prison Tats here. Like, I don't want to get involved in any community where the leader is named Jesus. Like, I have a reflexive, like, this, I really identified with, I think it's later when Prison Tats is talking about, this might be a cult kind of thing. That's exactly what I was thinking when they were talking
Jesus,
about Jesus.
Jesus shit's all occult, you know. Have we actually talked about the Michonne and Carol conversation yet?
No, let's do it now.
Okay.
Sadiq and Michonne briefly reunite with Carol. Sadiq takes the newcomers to find out where they're staying. While Michonne and Carol catch up, Carol tries but fails to convince Michonne to commit Alexandria to the upcoming Renaissance Fair. I assume.
And we didn't get it. We didn't get the mid-season Ren Fair. I'm still holding out for the end of season Ren Fair, though.
This is the right move. The fact that I'm annoyed that they didn't show me this fair tells me that this is the right move.
Yeah, they got you. Got the or the hook is
man.
Sank.
I have not been excited for anything about Walking Dead in 8 years. This is the first time. I want to see this fucking fair, because I know it's going to be ridiculous.
Well, especially since, like, how is this fair tied to the continued success of the kingdom? Because it seems like it is. Like, Ezekiel sent this letter that's like, hey, we're beset by problems on all side. The only solution is to hold a Renaissance fair.
Now, this,
please send your delegation of lord and ladies forthwith through the king. Like, what? I mean, that's a very Ezekiel thing to do. Like, you know what? We're having, our pipes are bursting and the water doesn't work anymore. And our crops are failing, but hey, we got a super bus, and we're gonna have some jousting and some turkey legs. Fucking come on down! Like,
it really does feel like a medieval, like morale booster. Like, oh, the peasants are getting restless. Let's
bread and circuses,
them.
Baby. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And the thing is, they keep ticking off things that can't be, because like the characters, like, you know, Carol Michonne, who have been together since mid season two, are talking about like, you know, hey, I could turn you, but we got our troubles too. And it's like, you know, we both lost stuff. We both lost children. We both still kept going. We're a family. We're still a family. But the one thing I guess she says is, but you know, Alexander's Alexander, Hilltop's Hilltop, Kingdom's Kingdom, and in between there's a whole lot of broken world. And I guess that means that Rick ultimately was right. That bridge was a linchpin. Because once they started, like, once easy trade between this, like, going into the wilds was seen as too dangerous. But yet, God, there's so many obvious advantages to trade. It looks like Hilltop's the only thing that can actually fabricate metal. Mm-hmm. That, like, Alexander, I think, has the best farms, perhaps. I don't know what the kingdom's making, but, like, it does seem like trade would be very important and beneficial between the community. So, like, what the fuck stopped all that? And it can't be herds.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I think every season of The Walking Dead should end with a fair from here on out. I think if you got a show that's going beyond 10 seasons, you got to just end it with a fair, because you're going to need the morale boost for the audience.
Yeah, you got Downton Abbey had the Christmas episodes. The Walking Dead got to have their fairs. Yeah. Shit, yes, absolutely.
Do you think they'll win this year's best fair Emmy?
Well, it's hotly contested.
Yeah, sure.
You know, look at the fair they threw in, fucking Watchmen. Yeah, sure.
Sure.
They did have a fair in Watchmen, the Hoboken deal.
Sure.
Or yeah, the psychic squid killed it. I mean, it's hard to top that fair. So, you know, it's stiff competition. We'll see what they did, especially since it was 2 years ago that it aired.
Yeah.
I have to go back in time, invent the fair DeLorean for it.
All right, next up, they walk around the herd, and Aaron and Jesus are talking about what a good tracker Daryl is and how he's fighting his true calling, just like Jesus is, by neglecting mm-hmm. Hilltop. Daryl hears the herd coming, and he realizes they're coming for them. He hears them on the wind. They're making him into this, like, ultimate tracker, and I know he's been that for a while, but, like, hearing the dead on the wind...
The zombies, my friend, are blowing on the wind. They're moaning and they're groaning on the wind. Yeah, no, it is. I rolled my eyes a little bit, but you know what? It's fucking cool, that sonic grenade. That's the kind of nitty gritty low tech solutions to zombies that I just live for. And him winding that thing up and throwing it, like, I thought that was really cool. They did lay it on a little thick, because I don't know. It seems to me like he just has to follow the dog. The dog is doing the heavy lifting here. Maybe that's what the secret is. Like, he's just following the dog and you're just like making up all this shit about, oh yeah, zombies on the wind. Sure, yeah.
Right. And I think it's the Daryl speak is half dog speak. So like they can just chat with each other.
Well, I mean, he's more of a wildcat, but you know, maybe the dog's bilingual. Yeah.
That's the thing. I would think if you would detect walkers in any way, it'd be with your nose. Like, a large herd of walkers probably smells pretty bad from
if the sound is carrying on the wind, the stench.
For sure.
The rotting meat is definitely coming on the wind.
Then Shitty Bow Girl decides to go back to the kingdom with Carol. She's not Shitty Bow Girl. I don't know who she is.
Substantial Bow Girl, I think, is what we've decided on.
Henry spends his first paycheck on nails and screws for Carol to take back to the kingdom, and she says a teary goodbye.
Gonna make you proud, you're gonna have, you know what, damn the show again, it's my dad in me, like this gets me all choked up. I don't know why, because Henry's fucking annoying and he's always been a shit on this show, but it's the parent stuff always gets me going. It's weird though, with so much animosity between the kingdom, that like Substantial Bow Girl can just go and say, you know what, kingdom needs me more, I'm heading off, and like it's a non-issue. Mm-hmm. Or like in fact Tara's the one, because like I felt like Tara was also pretty cool towards Michonne, but she's saying, yeah, go support the kingdom. I don't know, maybe this is like a subtle dig at Alexandria too. Maybe everyone thinks that Michonne is the one that's carrying this grudge more. And that's
I think so. That my, tracks with what the council.
But it feels to me, it maybe Maggie too, but Maggie's gone now. Yeah. So, but it seems like yeah, Maggie and Michonne are the ones that are really holding this grudge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
Grudging. So the size of the herd is doubled. Daryl's noise grenade goes off, leading the walkers in the other direction. Just a quick.
And they're
scene.
Like, hey. So who cares how many zombies? As long as they're going the other way, we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, the zombies aren't your average, ordinary zombie herds, Jim.
True. They have no idea what they're dealing with.
Mm-mm.
And then Henry starts his blacksmith training, and Enid comes over and disappoints him by making out with the young hipster blacksmith whose name
Boston
I can't
remember. Rob.
Okay.
Boston Rob. He's like, Of course, here's the other thing. Enid's like 22 years old now, right? And Henry's like 15.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It is. We got an Anakin Padme situation going on. Yeah, it's true.
You know, it's like you hook up where you can hook up.
That'd be a real bummer for Enid, I think, to like be romanced by a 15-year-old blacksmith. I don't know. I don't know. Seems like maybe Boston Rob's looking pretty good because he can smith us with the best of them at this point.
But
I did notice that like
significantly older than her, right?
Boston Rob?
He's got to be mid-30s at the youngest.
Maybe you're right. I always thought Boston Rob was young, but yeah, he, you know, even if he was in his young mid-20s, he's still, but yeah, I don't know, apocalypse age gap, you might be onto something.
Yeah.
Because the thing I notice is they're blacksmithing and they're not wearing hearing protection. These people are all going to be deaf by the time they're 40.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not always good with my hearing protection, but the one, if I'm banging metal on metal, that shit just seems like it's worse than jet engines for killing your ears. It made my ears cringe watching it happen.
You think this is them really blacksmithing on the show, or is this like an effect?
What do you mean? It did look like they were hammering some. I guess I didn't look for the seams, but it looked like they were hammering glowing metal and shit. I don't know how sound the blacksmithing was, but like, yeah, it looked like they were really doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that is pretty dangerous, cool. Though, to have a star, to have the stars of your show working with 1,000-degree pieces of metal.
I would think so, yeah.
And banging on without wearing hearing protection.
I don't know. It worked. I thought it was cool. And then Negan continues to try to get under Gabriel's skin. Gabriel gets fed up with it and reveals the situation he's in with Rosita.
Things have been in my ass are now in your nose.
Like, so fucking I've understood
Negan,
this.
Man. He's such a child.
For a long time, I've understood this to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, anything you smell, it's the nature of smelling something.
It's a physical particle entering your nasal passage. Yeah.
It horrifies me, but it's how it goes.
It is. It is. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think about Negan? Is he... I don't know what to think about Negan, because I thought that this kind of affected him, that like, oh, God, I was a little too hard on Gabe. But then did Gabriel just forget to lock him in, too?
So this is maybe the lingering point of the episode that I have a problem with.
Yeah,
because they had an opportunity here to make it Negan's own cunning, Negan's intentional, you know, disruption of Gabriel's mental state that caused him to be lax enough to leave this gate open.
Yeah.
Like, there was no intentionality to what Negan did here.
Show us hearing him at the window, like hearing that, like, oh God, Rosita's hurt and like and everyone's got the day and you have to stay here. And although I don't understand, I'd like to hear that conversation anyway, because like the thing seems like that anyone could stay and watch the governor. But maybe the man who is shacked up with the woman who's hurt should have priority for going to the place to be with her, you know?
Sure.
Like, of all the people they chose to stay behind Alexander, they chose him.
Yeah, that's weird.
I think you're right. They could have done some more of making it seem like that Negan was fucking with Gabriel because he knew there was a weakness there and he could exploit it.
Yeah.
Instead of being like Gabriel spacing it, getting so mad about smelling his shit. And scratching and never finding a real human being that he just forgets to lock him in.
And then Negan accidentally discovers that that's true instead of like that being the point of these conversations.
It almost felt like there's a missing scene that connected the two.
Yeah, but even if there was, that last scene doesn't work. where yeah. he discovers, you know, that the door's been left open. I don't know if they're trying to do something here with Negan that says like he's, you know, a man who's just resigned to his fate. They're going about it all wrong because he's trying to get under everyone's skin, which to me says he's looking for weaknesses. He's probing around the edges for some kind of plan he's got. But then the plan turns out to not be a plan.
Yeah. Well, and I want to wait till I get to the scene to talk about it. But like, yeah, the scene where it's revealed that he's free.
Yeah.
Was kind of strange, too.
Yep. Okay, let's move on to Henry not able to eat because he's depressed about Enid, but he's befriended by a group of teens who are worried about him. They invite him to hang out with them in the woods when night falls, and he agrees.
I call them these guys the freaks and geeks because that's kind of, you know, it feels like they're the outcast teenagers, or maybe this is all the teenagers.
Yeah, they're just bored teenagers.
It's just jerk-ass teenagers.
They stand a little bit in contrast with Henry. Like, yeah. Henry's the teenager who's been entrusted with a fair bit of responsibility and is currently getting more. Mm-hmm. They're just sitting up on the wall. Like, they're just a pair of eyes, you know?
Yeah, what do they do to earn their keep? Is that what they are, literally lookouts? Because there's precedence for that, because isn't that what Rick was using Alexander's people for? Like,
yeah.
One of the, like, a 13-year-old girl was one of the relay people, you know? Like, but
that's tough, man. As a teenager, if your job is to just sit there bored... 99.9% of the
time. They're gonna fuck around.
You gotta give teenagers something to do, something to make them feel like they've got some worth, right?
Yeah, that's what my question is like, this seems like an obvious weakness of Hilltop. Maybe I wonder if it's a reaction to whatever happened, that like, mm-hmm. oh Jesus, we have to like really take care of our precious angels because if something happens to them and you know, it seems like it's kind of ruining them, or it's not helping them feel fulfilled or connected to the community, or
right.
even their own humanity. I like this too, because this is something else that The Walking Dead has always kind of touched on, the idea that like, what if these experiences make Carl a psychopath? What if growing up in this world just like fundamentally changes you? And you see some signs of at least some of these teenagers that they're like, you know, I don't know where on the pulling legs off of spiders versus setting a cat on fire spectrum that using a former human's body as target practice and like a urinal, but like it seems like it's kind of some savior shit more than Hilltop Alexandria shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely some bored teenager, a bored unsupervised teenager shit.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get up to some dumb shit when you're a teenager.
But I feel like broken windows, property damage is like one kind, but like,
yeah.
I you know, like I said, like that's like one of the defining things of like a psychopath is like, did they torture animals as a child? And again, I don't know where zombies stand on that, but right. like, it's a little uncomfortably close to me, but then I didn't grow up in a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely distorted their views on things for sure.
I guess I did come out last episode saying that we should like lash a bunch of zombies to and use them for free labor.
Yeah. So you can't really think they're too.
I don't think they're human. It's just like they're like, to the extent that we respect animals' rights, I don't think it has anything to do with the animals. You know, it's more to like what it says about us because. Hmm. You know, whether we treat cows humanely or not, it's not like 300 years from now, there's going to be a tell-all from the cow's perspective of the human's tyranny, right? Like, we're doing this about, right. it's more about what it says about us as people and our humanity and what we extend to other creatures than it is like, you know, cows aren't human. So,
yeah,
it is. It's an interesting, I wonder if they'll lean into it or if they'll just have the simplistic, well, you know, using zombies in any way other than just giving them peace is a decidedly evil thing. Like using them for manpower, using them for scarecrows, using them for anything but just, you know, the fact that they're a former corpse of a person that needs to be shown respect is a bad thing.
Yeah, it does seem like they drew a line there between the
yeah
our survivors and the sanctuary people.
And they keep doing it. Yeah, it's been a big theme this season. You know, like that's one of the earliest scenes is Daryl being pissed off that they're using them for scarecrows, which seemed like that seems like a reasonable use for them, but
mm-hmm.
and it's not. And this is also like, because I thought it's like, well, maybe it's just because it's inherently too dangerous, but no, it does seem like this is more of like, nah, it's just not the right thing to do.
Yeah. All right, Sadiq and Michonne sit over Rosita's bed. Sadiq tries to convince Michonne to reconsider her isolationist stance, but it doesn't work, of course, because like, literally everyone in this show has tried to convince her of that now. Mm-hmm. It never works. Rosita wakes up and wants to go out for Eugene because she's freaked out about what kind of danger the search party might be in. They don't know what they're dealing with.
They have no idea. You don't know what's out there. She's channeling Rick Grimes. It is, these conversations with Michonne are very stilted because, and I don't know, maybe that's realistic because they're talking about a thing and it seems like there should be more detail. Like, you know, like, hey, come on, Michonne, haven't you considered a thing relevant to the discussion? But it's all just, you know, have you thought any more about this thing we've all talked about a bunch of times? No, I haven't. And they also reveal that Michonne is aware that, like, a lot of people think her decision's unpopular.
Yeah.
Like if you took a poll in Alexandria, maybe, but that leads to even more questions. Like, who the fuck runs, who runs Alexandria? Is it the city council or is it Michonne, the security chief? Like, is there a shadow dictatorship going on there? It's pretty interesting.
There is, like, so, you know, some of the members, aka Michonne, have more sway over the council than the rest of them.
And you'll always have that. You'll always have the elder statesmen and women, you know, like even if you set things up like, you know, I just watch Hamilton. George Washington had an enormous amount outside influence in the early founding of the country just because he was so well respected from his role and leadership that he showed during the Revolutionary War. And Michonne certainly has that. But, you know, also, if you've seen Hamilton, part of that is George Washington stepped down because he knew that was what was right for the country to stand on its own feet. And that's something Rick had a problem with. And I wonder if what they're telling us is that Michonne is having that same problem. That, like, you know, like, oh, God, what if I step away and there's a power vacuum and something bad fills it? I wonder if her thumb on the scale, and we've seen her do that with the new guys and all that stuff. I wonder if that's something they're trying to make explicit.
Yeah. Next up, Daryl's group finds Eugene in a shack. And he insists the herd is not normal and that they have to get out of there before they can leave. The herd closes in, of course, and they're forced to take another route home. I don't understand in this scene. Eugene spends a good 45 seconds to 2 minutes talking about how we can't pop my knee back in place because that's going to take too long. But here's the deal. Here's everything I know about the walkers. They're not normal. We got to get out of here. Oh, and they got a bunch of questions about how he survived. And like, there's just a lot of talking here when Daryl should just be over there reaching for his knee, popping it back in place. And 10 minutes later, he'll probably be walking around on it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if Eugene's got the structural integrity of, because isn't a knee dislocation, like, can you just really pop it back in and start walking like a shoulder?
From what I understand, yeah, like most of it is... Yeah, the fact that it's out of place is what's causing all the pain and the inflammation and all that. And once you get it back in, I don't know if it's 10 minutes, it might be like a day.
Especially if he's been sitting there for a day, you know, it's gotten swollen and tight. It'd be interesting to see. But
certainly
they
can pop it back in, right? They've got the time. Yeah. They're talking
about
it.
Does Daryl know how? Because that's the thing is, like, I didn't even know you could dislocate a knee. Like, I thought if, like, your knee got fucked up, it's structurally busted. Like, you torn a ligament or whatever. I knew that about shoulders. But honestly, if I don't know how to pop a shoulder back in place. I wonder if Daryl just doesn't know, you know, like
hips and all kinds of joints. Like,
holy fuck,
that would hurt. I hear a hip dislocation is brutally painful, but
it is
one of those
things
where you pop it back in and it's like, oh, the major relief.
The relief, pulling a bad tooth, huh? But this establishing shot of this scene of them creeping across the misty moors of Georgia is just really fucking atmospheric and effective. It's one of it's been a while since Walking Dead impressed me with just like a shot. And I don't know how they got this shot.
Well, I feel like it's the drone work they've been doing. Like, all of this drone work, I can't recall seeing a nice wide shot of anything in the last 6 seasons of The Walking Dead. They've done like a whole bunch of them, right? There's shots, overhead shots of the kingdom,
overhead shots of the hilltop. Yeah, thank God they invented drones, you know, 6-axis stable drones, because God knows AMC wasn't going to pay for a boom truck to go out into some field and out, you know, like, shit, that cost money, man. How far off a highway is it? Nah, fuck that.
Right.
But you got this shot and it's beautiful. It's really, you know, like, this is where, like, the dread started to creep in, and a lot of it is because of what they're doing in the atmospherics, and they just nailed the aesthetic of this and that old kind of like Hammer horror, you know, werewolves creeping across the moor is just so good. So good.
Yeah. Shout out to the cinematography this season. I think it's been better, certainly.
And I also like the fact that, like, you know, Daryl does, you know, Eugene says it is, I know how this sounds, but the zombies are whispering to each other. And like, you know, in some of the early seasons, there was like a little frustration of people just like being in willful disbelief of zombies and whatnot. And I like the fact that like they're skeptical, but also like Eugene's a respected member of their group and Rosita would vouch for him. And holy shit, maybe there is something to this. Like I appreciated the fact that like there wasn't any like intentionally stupidity that the show sometimes traffics in. It felt, you know, really nice.
And later on, you know, when he makes, I hate to say this about Eugene, but he makes some really pertinent points about like, are you really going to say that the walkers can't evolve when the walkers are, whatever he says, preambulating into, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, no, he uses 50 words worth.
Humans have come back from the dead. There are no limits.
Yes, and the brain kills them. The brain's active. What do we know about the brain? It can acquire information. Like, it's a scientifically sound theory for having like a 2 days of coming up with it in a barn basement, you know? Yeah, I thought I thought it was, I was into it. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we go over to Henry and the teens partying in a shack in the woods, and they show Henry their walker in a hole. Addie isn't impressed and she walks away, and then Henry gets roped into dealing with the walker because, I don't know, he's got morals or something. And the other kids leave him in the hole with it.
When the one went, were these like suction cup arrows that they'd stuck into the zombie?
I thought they were darts.
Darts. Yeah. Because, they're sticking out of skull, and I'm like, how the fuck did this not kill the zombie? And Henry's kind of skeptical about all this shit, and then they start pissing on it, and then he's like, nah, this is fucking gross. Mm-hmm. And I like his, you know, he's very paladin, but he's right. Like, you know, he's like, what the fuck, man? He's like, hey, if I had to explain to you, you know, there's no answer that would satisfy you.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know. Like, Henry is going to have a hard life as a person who's this, you know, righteous about things. But on the other hand, he's not wrong. And, you know, standing up to these kids against his peer pressures says a lot about his character.
You think he's going to go tattle on him?
Well, that's the other thing. Like, that's, I think he's like really, you know, walking that like really paladin edge. Is like, hey, I'm not a fucking snitch.
Yeah.
I stood up for what I thought was right, and I put a stop to what I thought was wrong, and I'm taking my punishment on the chin. But I'm like, I'm not here to snitch on anybody.
I just don't know. It feels to me like the move for Henry here is to try and get his new friends involved in the community more.
Yeah. Hey.
Instead of going and ratting them out,
right.
Just go and say, hey, these kids are idle. They really don't know how to deal with that. We need to give them some responsibility.
Yeah. You know what's, you know how cool like drinking until you throw up and pissing on zombies is?
And puking on shoes. Tearing shoes.
what's really cool is rebuilding a society from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I know
you give them the right job, they could certainly start to feel invested in the community, right?
But you also wonder like how much of this reactionary shit is from like, you know, the fact, you know, well, we've all lost kids, right? That was something that they said about like the new crackdown. I wonder if, you know, these teenagers just grew up, they're like, you know, 5 years old when the apocalypse broke out, they were 8, 9, 10 years old when they came to Hilltop, and then, you know, they can't go outside, they can't do anything, and they're rebelling.
Yeah, absolutely. So then the Daryl group stops for a Eugene rest, and Eugene suggests that the walkers might be evolving. He wants the group to leave him behind because that's apparently what everyone wants in the apocalypse. But Jesus refuses, and Daryl decides he's going to lead them off. There's like this thing where Jesus says, oh, I'll lead them off. You guys go get back to the horses. But I don't know, apparently drama is easily generated by splitting the party. That's what you do in one of these things.
Well, I think he's got an
okay point with like strength does them no good here. It's about tactics and strategy, but like,
I think that Daryl's broadly right that like you've got, Everyone stays together with a person slowing them down, or someone makes, and like understanding of the zombie tactics thus far, like someone stays behind, attracts their attention, leads them off. And Daryl, you know, like this isn't some, you know, B team assistant to the blacksmith of Hilltop, right? This is Daryl fucking Dixon. Mm-hmm. And I like his bravado at the end. He's like, go hell, I'll probably beat you back.
Because he has like, slow ass Eugene.
Yeah, it's like me and Dog versus the world. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was splitting the party usually is something that's like eye rolling, but this seemed to be the call. This seemed to be the play to make. Although when they had the, you know, lifts Eugene's ham ass Boston butt roast over the fence, I bet they wish they had that third pair of hands to do some boosting.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, you and Cecily trying to boost me over a fence or something. You need the third pair of hands, man.
Absolutely. Also, you know, Daryl's going to be, you know, he's great, but he's going to be the least missed of any of these people, right? Like, he's been out in the wilderness by himself. If something happens to him leading the herd away,
that's also,
no
yeah,
one's really going to miss him.
You're going to send Jesus present at the hilltop to potentially die? Like, yeah. Daryl sees that stupid, too. Like, it makes sense on a lot of levels.
Yeah. Okay, Negan's bouncing his ball against the wall, but it bounces through the bars, which causes him to notice that Gabriel left his gate open, and he escapes.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about this, how I wish this had been a forced error on Gabriel's part, as opposed to just an accident.
Yeah. And I don't know what the hell they're going with, because the Negan's looking menacing, but like, what is he going to do? I kind of thought, like, as you know, we've been talking about how there's going to be a shot at some point of Negan getting that baseball bat underneath that tree. And we even joked about it being on a dark, stormy night with thunder in the background. And I'm like, those sons of bitches, they're going to do it. That's how the midseason's going to end. He's going to have a leather jacket. He's going to pull Lucille out of the mud, and there's going to be thunder crashing behind him because the storm's rolling.
Like Dr. Frankenstein, lightning striking behind him. Yeah.
Yeah, the storm's brewing behind, and I thought, man, but then they didn't. Yeah. He just holds it up like Thor's hammer, and the lightning strikes and charges it. But shit, we just see him kind of smile as Negan smile, and the menacing music starts up. But now, also, is it your impression that Alexandria is abandoned? Because I took it that like you Gabriel is the last of like the city council.
Yeah.
You know, there's rank and file citizens, children, all that kind of stuff still behind.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that Negan can take everybody. Like, what's he got? Like, he's got a tennis ball. And that's it. Like, the armory's still locked up. He's been in a cage for years.
Sneak out, right? Like, he's not going to cause any trouble. He's just going to sneak out and maybe go over to where Sanctuary used to be.
I think he makes a beeline for the tree, but I don't know, because they've also hinted that he's had a little bit of personal growth. You know, the fact that he can see like what he's seen from Alexander has to be that his broad thesis was wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need to brutalize people to keep him in line. But I'm curious to see where they go with that. It's just kind of lame that this was his escape. In fact, like, it's lame on multiple, like, the Gabe got so pissed off and worried about Rosita that he forgot to lock a door. Mm-hmm.
And then the guy who took Negan's handcuffs off didn't realize that he forgot to lock the door, didn't check.
Yeah.
The security guard did not do his job.
And the fact that you design a prison with just one door, like, you know, you make it past that one cell door and that's it. You know, like, it seems like you'd also lock the main door to make it a little bit harder to put some. So I don't know, but whatever. He's out. We'll see what they do with it.
Yep. All right. Tara brings the blacksmith to see Henry, who's in jail for throwing up on her boots. At least I think that's why. Henry won't talk to him until he threatens to send him back to the kingdom. And then Henry, he doesn't spill his guts, but he says he knows that he fucked up because it's, you know, his responsibilities are overwhelming him.
He saw his mom cry. I mean, he's lying, right? Like, is still like, well, I mean, he's owning up to the fact that he fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
But he can't say that, like, I don't know, like, what's the real story here? That I guess he does miss his family. He's disappointed that Enid doesn't have the hots for him. He had a difficult first bonding experience with the young people at this place. But I don't think seeing his mom cry and he needed to get drunk to block it out, I don't think that's the reason he's throwing up on Tara's shoes and being drunk and disorderly. So
for sure. But then the blacksmith says he'll talk to Jesus about a reduced sentence.
And I do like the idea that they have like some kind of formal codified justice. Like drunk and disorderly is 2 days in the clink. Seems pretty reasonable to me. You know, sober up, learn from your mistake, and then be released. I would love to see what other laws are on the books and how they differ between the communities.
Hmm. All right, then Daryl tries to lure the walkers off their path with a dog and firecrackers, but the walkers are too smart for that. They continue right on.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, it was very, I think they nailed this. Like, watching the herd steer perfectly around the trap was just unsettling. And he's fucking with Daryl, too. He's like, what the hell? Because no one's ever seen this before.
Yeah.
And, you know, Walking Dead sometimes stages these shots poorly. I thought, like, the vantage point they had, like Daryl's trap, all that stuff was well conceived, and you know, we got this nice wide shot of everything happening. It was very clear, and thank you to whoever shot this.
Mm-hmm. And then final scene, Jesus, Aaron, Eugene all enter a walled graveyard to escape the dead, which I think is hilariously ironic.
Mm-hmm.
It just
you know why they put a fence around those places? Because people are dying to get in, Jim.
Oh, yeah, they are.
And this is where the hammer shit just kicks into high gear.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all this stuff with the headstones, the wall, the wrought iron, the mist, the moonlight, the thunderstorm. It's just firing on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm. They're followed in by the dead, and they get stuck when they can't heft Eugene's bulk over the wall. Aaron and Jesus prepare to fight the herd, and they kill a few, and are confused when the walkers back off. Mm-hmm. And then Michonne, Prison Tats, and Headband Bow Girl, I don't know what to call her, magically appear and help them open the gate. Jesus decides to fight some walkers for no real reason, and in the process he gets stabbed and killed by one who's acting suspiciously human, and everyone else shows up. Literally everyone else from all of the community shows up all at the same time. They demask one of the walkers to reveal a human who was living as recently as a few minutes ago, but is now dead again.
Yeah, not a zombie at present. Are we sure Rosita's not in this group? Because that's the answer. Like, if Rosita,
sure she's not,
because like, and also Rosita could tell them exactly where she left Eugene, so they follow that. And then like, once you get there, following the herd, the track, that you know, imagine like what it would look like to follow like 400 people walking through a field. It'd be trivial. Like, you don't have to be the world's best tracker to track that kind of shit, right? So I think, like you said, they did enough on, like, if Rosita came with them, then there's no question in my mind that, like, yes. Yeah. And they had everyone, by circumstance, already at the hilltop, so everyone rolling out at once would just, you know, would work.
From what I remember, it's Michonne, Prison Tats. Well, it was just
Magna,
Michonne.
Magna, yeah.
Michonne didn't know anybody else was coming. It was just her. And then Prison Tats and Headband Bow Girl show up.
Yeah, yeah.
As like,
yeah, you're right. The timing on that is weird.
Earning their keep? What? What do you mean earning your keep? You've already, I don't know. You were already in a pretty good position. Now you're gonna go out and risk your lives. Magna's gonna go out and risk her life.
I think it's on brand for her because they've established that she wants to control her own fate. Like, sitting back and letting people decide things for her is like an anathema to her. So,
but
her
it was
coming
never
out
in a way that was like, oh, I'm going to prove to these people that we're worth keeping around. It was more
she did
like,
show up the Michonne like that late at night to give her personally surrender yet another knife that she had.
Well,
so, like,
she showed up to murder her, I think.
You think
and
so?
Changed her
oh,
mind
then changed
in
her
that
mind
moment
the kids.
When she saw a baby. Yeah. But I don't know. You could be right.
I don't maybe defend the fucking new guys too much because I'm still kind of like jury's out on them. But I would tell you what, I thought the Aaron and Jesus stuff would be kind of like eye rolly, but I kind of got into the kung fu synchronized, like these guys have been working together and like working on a routine and just like they're efficiently mowing these guys down silently, no guns. It's just like really fun to watch him kick ass, and that brings me to the question of, is Jesus dead?
Before we get there, I just wanted to comment a little bit more about the coolness of this scene, because it is cool. Like,
yes,
I really liked Aaron using his arm effectively, using it as a bite shield, essentially, like stick that in the walker's mouth, let them bite onto it. And then
he's Will Smith for my roboting them. Yeah,
absolutely. That heel kick that Jesus does to the walker's head, like when it's on the tombstone, it just splatters it.
Curb stomps it.
It's beautiful. I love that gory, terrible shit. And then his leap into the air, you know, that chest kick to knife slash spinning. I don't even know what to call it, but it's pretty cool.
He Beybladed him a couple times.
Okay. I think Jesus is dead. Like, they swizzled his guts in a way that...
Whoa, what?
Yeah, that sword guy went in.
He stuck like a foot-long blade in his side.
And kind of up. I don't know. There's a lot of organs in there, and you don't have the greatest med tech in the apocalypse. Yeah.
But Sadiq's pretty good, and Hilltop's well-equipped. I don't know. It's
but
not the wound.
Carry him back. I get it. Like, there's no way to stop this bleeding.
Right. Yeah, no, I get it. But on the other hand, you know, it seemed like Michonne and crew were able to get here pretty fast. I don't think they're that far away. And, you know, it's like, look, here's the thing. If you wanted him dead, you just stab him right through the heart. You stab him in the head. You cut his throat. You know, you do something that like shows definitively that this is a lethal wound. You stab someone in the middle of the midsection. I start getting squirrely, you know, Kevin Garvey vibes from The Leftovers. Like, someone's done some research and shown that, like, if you stick it right between the ribs and the abdomen and you get it right underneath the lungs and heart, but above the guts, that there's, you know, that's a survivable thing. And I don't know. But on the other hand, Aaron's right over him and would be the one to make the call that he's dead or not. And he says,
and he's
dead.
Doing nothing. Yeah. He's not like leaping in there to try and stop the bleeding. He's not. Everyone's just kind of like, well, Jesus is dead, let's have this conversation now and peel off these masks. Like, the first thing you do isn't run up to a walker and
that's
peel off
true.
The mask if you think
you're like,
your buddy
gotta,
is laying there dying.
We gotta get him home, we gotta get him out of here.
So in my mind, he is dead in their minds, if that makes any sense.
It doesn't, because like, I'm never that attached. I thought the guy who played Jesus was pretty cool. I liked the kind of like kung fu flair he brought to it. It is weird to have him take step forward into this leadership role. But then again, I don't know. Maybe that's going to be the thing that heals the community. Like, you know, that he was the one running these kind of back channels and trying to establish the stuff. And he dies for what he believes in. He dies just to save an Alexandrian, the leader of the Hilltop. It also paves the way for Maggie to come back next season.
Well, Tara. Tara is going to step in. Tara seems like she has been the leader.
Yes.
The de facto leader of this community.
That's true.
In all but name. Like, I mean,
so do we need Maggie back at all? Is
not currently.
Like, I just assumed that we were going to get her back at the next season, that they're going to give her enough time to go film whatever she needed to film, and then she'd come back, and you know, she's just kind of cooling out at Georgie's. But
I'm pretty sure she doesn't come back in season 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, they've really fridged her then.
I think so. Because I saw an interview with her from 9 months ago that was like, "Are you excited to you know, be coming back to The Walking Dead?" 9 months ago probably was before they had released, but not before they had started filming that season, that second half of 10.
Well, they never even finished the second half of 10. So like, what if she comes back at the finale? So I don't know. We're speculating about shit that people already know about. But I just think that, I don't know. Tara, fist bump. How do we feel about her being the leader of a community?
She seems to at least be willing to take on the responsibility, unlike Jesus.
That's true. She seemed to like, she's really willing to tear in and fill in that administrative role that, like, you know, clearly Jesus wasn't comfortable with. But I don't know.
Because
she
was doing most of it anyway. He was just making the decisions, right?
Is this a way, like, if Jesus dies, is this a way for them to, like, go back to Daryl and be like, you need, you know, Jesus? But that doesn't make sense, because, like, it felt like there was a plot here where Aaron was trying to impress upon Jesus that he's ducking his responsibility and his full potential the same way Daryl is doing.
Yeah.
Why do that if you're going to kill him at the end of this episode?
I'm with you. It seems like, I don't know.
But you're right. Like, but the other thing is, like, there's such a huge group. Is it possible? I need to go back and watch it. Like, is it possible that there's still a contingent, like, trying to stabilize Jesus? And then Daryl is just like, you know, him and Michonne are more interested in, like, what the fuck is going on with these evolved zombie kind of thing?
Maybe.
But I am really curious to get to find out more about this Whispers. Like, what a weird fucking, like, inventive post-apocalyptic group, like a group right. of people who are like going all in on the, you know, Rick and Glenn strategy of covering themselves with like covering themselves in a full zombie suit, expertly steering herds around to what purpose and what end. Like, what do they get out of running people down and, you know, getting zombies to eat them? Are they eating them too? Are they just doing this to get their gear? Or are they like trying to like destroy communities so they can inherit them? Like, what is their deal? How do they do it? I think this is all inherently fascinating.
Yeah. So dude, when he stabs Jesus, says you are where you don't belong or something like that.
Yeah. Are they like a, you know, those weird kind of eco terrorists that like the Human Extinction Project that thinks that, you know, we just irrevocably fucked up the planet and the best thing we can do is just stop having babies and die?
Yeah.
Or like the militant version of that is like we should actively, you know, support things that kill. The cull, the herd. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they're like that, that like, you know, zombies are the superior form of life. We had our run. We're kicking against the goads.
I mean, it's clearly not true. It's so demonstrably untrue.
Yeah. Yeah, but people would be crazy
if that was their philosophy.
I mean, I saw a trash-based philosophy that communities embraced, you know? It's weird,
right. All
sure.
Bets are off.
It's weird, sure. Is this any worse than the Guilty Remnant of The Leftovers? I mean, there's people do weird shit in extreme situations.
I want to see the people who've gone all in on the cat's life. Just, you know, are pulling the Q for Mission Impossible, or not the Q, the M for Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Is it M or is that Moneypenny? I can't remember.
You're talking about
Judi Dench. Yeah. I want to see the people who are just running around as furries constantly.
Oh,
in
right.
Apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah. They're fucking yiffing in the post apocalypse. Sure.
Oh, yeah. There's got to be some remnant of that lifestyle out there.
Yeah. The furry remnant. Sure. Yeah. I can see it. Stitching themselves into fursuits.
Hell yeah.
But this is also a pretty effective cliffhanger because, as you said, almost everyone we give a shit about is in this fucking Hammer horror graveyard, and they're completely hemmed in by an intelligent herd, or at least a herd that's being directed intelligently. That's some shit. I'm legit kind of beside myself to watch the next episode.
Yeah, fortunately, it's already out. We won't have to wait that long.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what the plan is here, but I think our plan is to see if we have enough feedback to do a feedback episode that's dedicated to that. If not, probably do maybe some other stuff to fill a single week and then get right back to it.
Yeah. To keep on trucking through at least season 9, because I looked at my TV guide. Shit, fuck all, still on television by and large. We have a couple things coming up. Umbrella Academy, The Boys, which I am legit excited about, more of a September thing or late August. So, yeah, it's going to be more Walking Dead coming your way, and with perhaps a brief interlude to consider feedback. So, hey, send in that feedback to watchingdead@baldmove.com or walkingdead@baldmove.com. And, you know, we will consider whatever feedback we got, either part of a larger episode or as a standalone, and we'll keep doing that. I think when we wrap up season 9, it'll be another good opportunity to consider feedback as well, because we are recording these in advance to kind of, you know, get us future proof on our schedule. But yeah, we would like to hear from you. And thanks to everybody who has sent in stuff thus far.
All right. And I think that'll do it for this half season. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tune in for that feedback episode or whatever it is next week. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.